I don't know if you ever saw the film Calendar Girls. It was highly recommended by Jonathan Watts, and he was right. It was a delightful movie. Most will know the story, but it's based on true events surrounding a Women's Institute group in Yorkshire who produced a rather racy calendar in which, in true artistic form, discreetly screened by sponge cakes and flower arrangements, they posed naked, or rather, as they insisted on calling it, nude, to raise funds for a leukemia unit at the hospital where the husband of one of the women had died. They reckoned that while shots of local landmarks might only sell a few calendars, a more interesting artistic calendar done in what the late Kenny Everett used to call the best possible taste would sell a whole lot more, and they did, £500,000 worth. Now, these were mature women of a certain age, not silly giggling girls out for a bit of a lark. They did their sums, figured out the emotional and social cost of such a daring escapade, and decided it was a cost worth paying in terms of possible criticism or misunderstanding. A cost worth paying in order to provide something that would help many, many other people. They were caring, but their caring was laced with a fair amount of daring. They dared to boldly go. They dared to push out the margins. They dared to think out of the box. They dared to care. Now, I'm not suggesting we try this at the Auditoire as an alternative to our church fair, but whether you approve of what they did or not, you can't fault their motivation and you can't doubt their courage. Daring and caring have often had to go hand in hand. Indeed, many of the major social improvements towards a more compassionate and caring society have been gained thanks to the courage of individuals prepared to go out on a limb, willing to encounter sometimes brutal opposition in order to pursue some commitment to justice or creative change. Votes for women, taken as a given by people today, were struggled for and bought at a high price. Brave women embraced fierce unpopularity, endured mocking and chauvinism to right a terrible wrong. Lord Shaftesbury swam against the strong tide of opinion in his campaign to make the prisons of England less monstrous and inhumane. The prison inspectors today know that their work is done in an atmosphere of harshness and widespread dismissal of the needs, rights and humanity of prisoners. Ironically, it's still not a popular cause, caring for prisoners. When Wilberforce raised the standard against the socially and internationally accepted practices of the slave trade, he was soundly and roundly criticised for his lily-livered liberalism, which others believed threatened to undermine the very foundations of society. Choose whom you will. Robert Owen, Keir Hardie, Elizabeth Fry, John Newton, anyone who challenges the status quo in the interest of humane change will need to have a thick skin and a willingness to face the slights and outrage of those whose vested interest in things staying just the way they are, thank you very much, makes them intolerant and rigid. All of this aggravated by the rise of the internet social media trolls of our day. See change and resist it seems to be the watchword. And if you are the one who, in the name of compassion, dares to care enough to initiate change, then don't expect to win any popularity contests. Let history show this is how it is for the ones who dare to rock boats. Whether you're a journalist committed to winkling out the truth because you believe the truth matters, committed to exposing corruption and hypocrisy because you believe the light should be shone in the grubby corners of society, whether you're a civil rights marcher willing no more to endure the humiliations of social injustice, least of all by the systems and the bureaucracies and the bigots who are not easy to shift. Caring for the unfashionable cause is a lonely, isolated, and sometimes dangerous business, not for the faint-hearted or the timorous. The defining precedent for that is found in the willingness of Jesus to touch the untouchable, to welcome the stranger, affirm the outcast, place at the centre of his ethic a Samaritan, speak with a fallen woman, celebrate the faith of a woman of a different culture and a suspect theology. It was how he worked, how he dealt with people on the basis of their need, not on the context of their manifesto or the extent of their eligibility. It was kind of loose and untidy, but it was full of compassion. The women of the church have long been champions of unfashionable causes. In spite of sometimes ugly opposition, the women of the church were among the very first to bring to the wider attention of the Scottish people the wickedness of apartheid in South Africa, and to campaign with a fabulous consistency for support to be given to those trying to change things. The church in South Africa is on record as stating its gratitude and debt to the women of the Church of Scotland for being there long and hard, long before it was fashionable, long before it was trendy, long before it was acceptable. Their persistent and incisive critique of a shameful and degrading political system, now mercifully ancient history, was consistent and committed. And there were those at the time who berated and criticised those women of the church for their unswerving stand, claiming they should get back to making scones and leave the real issue to people who could cope. Nestles soon came to realise that underestimating the church woman was a big mistake. Nestles' cynical campaign to encourage mothers in poor countries to use powdered milk was challenged in the name of good health, good practice. And the Church of Scotland Women's Guild introduced a powerfully effective boycott against Nestles, the pressure of which eventually was enough to bring that giant conglomerate to review its advertising strategies. And to a church that had grown complacent about language that seemed to sideline the feelings of women, that same guild brought a tough-minded invitation to look again at how we speak about our faith and within our faith, so that we don't slip into lazy ways of thinking and worshipping that appear to exclude women, seem to suggest that God is only interested in the salvation of men, in the calling of men to the important roles in the church. The women of the church reminded the wider church that nowadays that kind of gender bias simply won't wash. And though the men of the church had to hear that message loud and clear, they didn't like it very much. Slipped all too easily into the clichés and caricatures and distortions that would leave them comfortable with their complacencies. The women insisted that that would not do. Think again, men. Think better. Think. The women of the church have always been aware that we live in a broken world where there's a lot of caring to be done, and that to embrace that calling of compassion will, from time to time, take the genuine carer to the margins. To the margins and beyond. Such a calling has never fazed them, and their projects, about which the members have learned to be informed as well as caring and prayerful, have led them to the kinds of sleeves-up, hands-on, hands-dirtied commitment that real love demands. Time and again, they have boldly gone where no man has gone before, pretty much. That meant working with AIDS sufferers in all their vulnerability and sometimes aloneness. It meant caring for prostitutes in Leith and Edinburgh, abused and treated as things by men. Now they're treated as human beings by church project workers who get up close and personal with people others might disdain, despise, push to the edges, leave outside in the rain. The women of the church have continued to be at the forefront of involvement with the homeless and the unwanted ones, the feckless and the vulnerable, not stopping to ask about, do they deserve it? Are they deserving or not deserving? But happy to deal with real people as they are, where they are. When the Muslim towns in Bosnia needed support to rebuild shattered communities, in the face of those who wondered why a Christian organisation should be helping Muslim families, the church women knuckled down to learn about their plight, and realising that people in need are people in need, they then sought to make things better, provided help, offered love, support, provided life-building, life-rebuilding assistance. And when a whole society attempted to brush the issue of domestic abuse under the carpet, refused to believe it was happening with such staggering frequency in the houses of Scotland, the women of the church issued the challenge to deal honestly with the realities, face the facts, grapple with the issues. The badge of caring seems to have as its key symbols those that speak about the powerless needing to be empowered and the vulnerable needing to be supported. So you know what I hate? I hate it when people patronise the women of the church. It happens at the General Assembly rather too much, where they spend hours on matters of staggeringly stupid insignificance and then pass over as routine the astonishing commitment and contribution made to the life of the church and the life of Scotland by the women of the church, through the Guild and beyond. It happens when journalists who know nothing about what the women are really doing to make a difference for countless lives, speak of them in demeaning tones and dismiss what they do as jam making and knitting. It makes me want to take these people by the collar and make them look at what it means to care, how it costs, how you have to go into the fiery furnace of human need sometimes, how you have to put your neck on the block to espouse some radical initiative. The women of the church get on with it, while the rest of the church rather too much hums and haws and hesitates and holds back from involvement, engagement. It makes you want to yell, get your facts right. We're dealing here with in-your-face, radical, dangerous, cutting-edge compassion, informed decisions, not just to sit idly by, but to make a difference, to put your head and your heart in the cement mixer of human pain in order to do the work of Jesus Christ in a lost and frightened world. I like the way the women cut to the chase. They don't just talk a good game. They don't just talk about faith. As James suggests, they get things done. They roll their sleeves up. They dare to care. Hands on, hands dirty, hands rough and sore from showing real love, real compassion.